Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to know.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
And welcome to Table 2 of the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, where the Bad Beat jackpot is up to $124,000. We've got more than 80 people playing in the 1 o'clock tournament this afternoon, and we're going to start the new 2-5 game. Here in about an hour, a whole bunch of people have already signed up for that. Hello, I am Paul Harrah's here in St. Louis, while my partner Dennis Phillips is once again in Las Vegas. Hi, Dennis, how are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. I hear you played in a deep stack event and had a nice deep run.
I was at the Venetian. I love their structure and the way they set it up. I played a $500 event there. I had about 300 people in it. Sat down and looked across the table and Barry Shulman was sitting there.
Barry Shulman, the guy who won the WSOPE last year.
Yeah, I mean, I looked around the entire room, and there were some other people I knew and all that stuff, but not exactly too many of them that are walking around with bracelets and stuff. And, of course, at my first table, hi, Barry, how you doing?
Uh-huh.
We end up at the same one. Well, a day and a half later, I look across the table, and guess who's still sitting at the table?
Really?
Barry Shulman.
Did you both make the final?
We did. He ended up finishing second. I finished fifth.
Well, congratulations.
It was fun. A good group of people. Some interesting play. A couple of them I kind of questioned, but you shake your head and whatever. And I have to admit that I laid down a shove from Barry that dropped me. We started with 15,000 in chips. It dropped me all the way down to 8,000. I built up a little over 20. I lost 2/3 of my stack to it. He shoved on the river, and I laid it down. And I asked him later, and he had my tail kicked.
Good lay down then.
Yeah, it turned out to be a very, very, very good laydown. It didn't make sense for him to shove without having a monster hand, and he did. He plopped a set, and I got away from it. Cost me a lot of chips, but I got away from it. Barry's a very good player, solid player, and at the final table, when it got heads up, he had about 2/3 of the chip, and then the cards just did not go his way.
Mm.
Very capable player.
Speaking of good players who've come in second recently, our guest in about 15 minutes is going to be John Reisner, a guy who at one point last week could not believe what had happened to him when it got down to three-handed and he was way the short stack and the two big stacks butted heads, and he kind of stood back with a giant grin on his face. He will join us in about 15 minutes or so, and we're hoping next week to have the guy who finally beat him in the heads-up battle, Jonathan Duhamel, here on the final table. Also today, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I actually up at the final table when it ended there, I was up talking to him just briefly after the whole thing was over, and I said, who was the happiest one at the table when they both got it all in together? And he said, without a doubt, me.
Also coming up on the show today, the tournament director of the Hollywood Casino in Lawrenceburg, Kansas, where Dennis and I are both going to play in the Hollywood Fall Classic this week. I don't know if you know this, Dennis, but in their first event there last week, 985 people showed up.
Oh, that has to be a new record for them. I mean, that's monstrous.
Yep. Well, we'll talk to Kevin Dawn from the Hollywood a little bit later on. Since you mentioned Barry Shulman and bracelets a moment ago, I got to talk about a bracelet story that's in the news, and it involves a guy who you played against 2 years ago in the November 9. You came in third. He came in first. Peter Eastgate, who we talked earlier this year about how Peter announced that he is essentially giving up poker. He is no longer traveling around the world. He's no longer a Team Poker Stars pro. I don't know if he's still playing online or if he's still playing in London, which is where he had moved to from Denmark, or if he's really given up the game entirely. But this week, Peter put his main event bracelet up for grabs in an auction on eBay. It's a charitable thing with the money going to UNICEF. He says, I'm very proud of my title, but the bracelet itself, I never wear it. I really don't wear any jewelry. So I thought by giving away the bracelet and a couple of watches that I wear, a lot more people will be able to benefit from these items. What do you think about that, putting up a main event bracelet for auction on eBay?
Well, I'm a little flabbergasted by it, and I did not know this. You hit me by surprise on it. I know Peter. I know him well. I consider him a friend of mine. I could see Peter doing something like that. People don't realize that side of him, that he's a genuinely very good guy. He is very giving, very likable. He's just a little bit shy and retired. He doesn't like standing in front of the cameras and all the media attention, and, you know, I don't blame him on that. But for him to give that away, that's so unselfish. That's that wow. What's the bid on it? What can I put on, in on it?
Well, that's the question. Before I tell you how much he wants as a minimum, for as a reserve price, I'll ask you, what do you think this thing will go for?
Oh, I have no idea. But, there are so few of them in existence. It has to come at a premium. The pure value of itself, I don't know. I mean, it's worth several thousand dollars just from the contents, the metals there and everything. But and the fact that, you know, designed well and all this other stuff. I would bet that'll bring, you know, what, 50 grand or something.
It is made up of 18-karat white gold with 291 diamonds. On the face, of course,
holy
says
shit.
World Series Whew. Of Poker 2008. Hand-painted in silver, decorated with black and red card suits. You think it'll go for $50,000?
Okay. How far off am I?
Well, the starting bid, the minimum bid he wants...
Oh, no.
$16,000.
Oh. He's being very reasonable. It's probably worth that in just the diamonds and the gold alone, isn't it?
I think it probably is. But I want to go back to one aspect of this that I found a little bit odd. Yeah, he doesn't really wear any jewelry. Either do I, except for my wedding ring. I don't even wear a watch anymore because, you know, I have a phone with the time on it, so I stopped wearing watches a couple of years ago, and I've never worn any other kind of jewelry. But if I were to win this, and let's have a good laugh over that thought for just a second, because it'll never happen, but if I were to win this, I would not look at this as jewelry. I would look at this as a trophy.
That's a good point. Oh. Wow. Now, I honestly, if I never will either. I made it deep. To make a second run like that, just, you know, you can't even think about it. But if I would win that bracelet, I don't think I could ever part with it.
And we're both very charitable people. We do lots of stuff for charities all the time, have raised money and given money to charities, and we have the ultimate respect for Peter for wanting to do good for a good charity. But $16,000, let's be honest, Peter could write a check for that.
Yeah. I'm a little flabbergasted, and it won't go for $16,000 either.
You think it'll go for more than that?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
Well, you and I both know a lot of people who paid $10,000 to try to win that bracelet.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, I'm not talking about people who qualified like you did for a couple of $100 at a qualifier here at Harrah's St. Louis, or who may have done it online like Chris Moneymaker did for $39, or on and on and on. There are still people who are laying out the full $10,000 to get into that main event who will look at this and go, well, here's really the only chance for me to ever get a bracelet. I'll pay $20,000 and I'll have a bracelet. And you know what? Those people would wear it.
And the other thing, there is a little bit of an underground market for these things. I have actually seen out here at the World Series people trying to sell different bracelets. Not a one of this caliber. I've never seen that. But, you know, a winner of a 1K event or of the Omaha or something like that, maybe from 10 years ago or whatever. And these are somewhat collector's items, and they do get shuffled around. For whatever reason, somebody has to give up one of the bracelets, then it gets shuffled around.
Yep. All right.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. And, you know, we'll keep an eye on that and see what it does end up going for. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. And let's see what else is in the poker news this week. A month ago, we told you that PokerStars had pulled out of Washington State. That because of a ruling by the justices of the Washington State Supreme Court that online poker was not legal in their state. And you filled us in on why PokerStars made the decision to ban all their players in that state from playing online. Finally, a month later, the news comes in that Full Tilt Poker, as you predicted, has followed suit. Full Tilt announced that the players who have accounts with them will be able to keep their accounts. So if they travel to one of the other 49 states or up to Canada or anywhere else and log in from there with a different IP address, they will be able to play. But once they're in the confines inside the borders of the state of Washington, they will not be able to log on. We've not yet heard from Doyle's Room and UB and Absolute Poker and any of the other sites, but I would assume that they're now all going to fall in line now that Full Tilt has followed PokerStars' lead on this, right?
I would think so. I don't think they have any choice in the matter. Again, when there's a gray area, when it hasn't been totally defined, and there can be arguments among the attorneys, which they seem to love to argue,
is
one thing. But they came out with a clear-cut statement, like it or not, agree with it or not, think it's legal or not, doesn't make any difference. They've come out with a clear-cut statement, and you need to abide by it.
Yep. All right, another item here in the news this week. Remember, I was in Las Vegas last month, and I was complaining about the lack of Pot Limit Omaha games. Couldn't find a 1-2-5 or a 2-5 PLO game. Managed to start one up at the Bellagio one afternoon, and the dealers there were shocked because they almost never deal those except during the summer when the World Series of Poker is going on. They get one going occasionally at the Venetian. Of course, it's a big deal here in the Midwest. You go to Harrah's, St. Louis, or any other pretty decent casino with a poker room in the Midwest, and in the South, you're going to find PLO, but it has not taken off nearly as much as we had hoped it would. But maybe it'll get a push from Poker After Dark, which last week, in addition to filming some regular No Limit Hold'em sessions, did a session of Pot Limit Omaha with some guys who you would never want to play Pot Limit Omaha with. Starting with, of course, Phil Ivey, Tom Dwan, Brian Hastings, Phil Galfond, Patrick Antonius, Sammy Farha, and Brandon Adams, playing with 300, 600 blinds and 100K buy-in. Frankly, I think if you buy into that game for 100K, you're really going to be playing short with 300, 600 blinds in a PLO game. Can you imagine that?
No, I can't, to be truthful. I can't imagine that lineup. Oh, my gosh. I'm trying to figure out who's the weak one there, and very fortunately, I'm not the one sitting down at that table.
But as I say, the good thing about this is it's going to give PLO more TV exposure, and I really think that that's what that game needs. You know, we talked to Norman Chad this summer about why ESPN doesn't show anything except No Limit Hold'em anymore, and he says they find that the ratings go down, and that some of the games are too confusing. And I would agree that when you're mixing it up with Limit Hold'em and No Limit Hold'em and Raz and the other horse games and Deuce to Seven Triple Draw and all those sort of things, 99.9% of poker players aren't playing those anymore. But Pot Limit Omaha seems to be kind of the second favorite game for a lot of people now. And if we can get the TV exposure, don't you think that can only be good for the game and get more people interested in playing it?
Oh, absolutely. It's a great game to play. Definitely a lot of excitement, a lot of thrills, a lot of skill involved in it. And there's so many other games here now. They just don't do quite as well on TV. I love playing Deuce to Seven. I love playing Raz. I love playing a lot of these other games, but they just don't have the appeal on the TV, so they haven't picked up as well as the No Limit has.
Yep.
Maybe this on the PLO, maybe if they get to see the quality of play these guys have and the size of the pots and how much is at risk, maybe it will start gaining some acceptance with the customers, the people that are actually watching on TV.
Well, I'm happy that Maury and the people at Poker Productions are doing this on Poker After Dark because we need the exposure. And I really think because it's a flop game like Hold'em, that a lot of people are going to watch it, become interested in it, grasp the concept of the flop, the turn, and the river. They know that already. It's just a matter of making those choices with four cards in your hand instead of just two. Speaking of high-stakes action, you know, there is an APPT event going on in Macau, or there was for the last week or so, and a Chinese guy by the name of Zhang Dan Pong, who was playing in his first-ever live tournament, beat a field that included Phil Ivey and Tom Dwan and John Juanda and Chao Zhang and others. He's the first Chinese player to win the APT in Macau, but the story was not the tournament, but the side action where some very wealthy Chinese businessmen sat down with those four pros that I just mentioned with about $5 million on the table.
Did you say former wealthy businessmen?
Yeah, I believe that Ivy won a $2 million pot at one point. I think you could probably expect some of these pros to be going over to Macau a lot more often than they had before.
Absolutely. I think that picks up the game over there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Speaking of TV poker, high-stakes poker was supposed to record Season 7 last week, but they didn't. That's been delayed until December. Don't know what that means about the air dates, which are usually in February or March. We don't know when they're going to tape the new ones next month. Maury hasn't put out the word about who will play. I'm sure he's still trying to line people up for that, which is still the second most popular poker show on television after, of course, ESPN's coverage of the main event. And bad news for ESPN with the final table this year. Viewership down 26%.
I read that. I'm not for sure exactly why the viewership was down, to be honest about it. A lot of good quality players, a lot of good play there. Maybe the storyline's not as quite as strong, but, you know, a little disappointed in that. I don't know. You have any thoughts? You have any reason why you think that went down?
Well, you know what? About a week or 10 days before the broadcast, ESPN moved the time slot. It had normally been airing at 8 p.m. every Tuesday here in the Central Time Zone. The regular two-hour broadcasts were from 8 to 10. But when they got to the final table, they moved it back to a 9 o'clock start. And it's entirely possible that one-hour delay did hurt them a little bit in the ratings. I don't know. I think perhaps also there were 61,000 people who saw the live stream that was on ESPN3.com and felt like, well, they didn't need to watch the highlights if they had watched the whole thing as it actually played out. I don't know.
Yeah, good point. But I don't know for sure either. But
And the other thing about the final table that I've got to mention, when you were in it 2 years ago and you were part of the initial November 9, Harrah's had to take the prize pool that they didn't pay you out in July and put it in escrow, and that escrow fund had to earn interest, which then got added to what you guys got at the end, right?
Correct, correct.
Well, of course, they had to do it last year, and they had to do it this year. The amount that was escrowed this year was something like $20 million. That's the amount that was paid out to the final eight. They didn't have to have any more money for the ninth place person because they all got ninth place money paid out in July, and so...
Correct.
When Soy Win went out in ninth place, he didn't get anything extra. He got what he'd already gotten in July, and that was it. And then when you moved on to the eighth place, now they're getting the extra stuff. The whopping amount of interest on 111 days when you have $20 million in escrow, this will tell you something about investment rates now and savings rates. Each player at that final table made an extra $459. Isn't that unbelievable? Small?
That, yeah, I'm a little bit flabbergasted.
$20 million put aside, and you can only come up with, well, what is that, 32, 30? That's a little over $3,400 that that Harrah's paid out in interest to the final eight there. But again, it has to do with the way interest rates are now, and I guess it's hard to find somebody who will give you a better rate than that on $20 million for just about 4 months. And the other thing before we bring on John Reisner here is that the NAPT in Los Angeles this weekend had 701 players. As we begin our broadcast today, they're about to start day number four. They're down to 22 players with Michael Binger and Jason Mercier among the chip leaders and Matt Affleck in there as well. Matt Affleck has been tied into a lot of the stories that we've been talking about, that humongous beat he took from Jonathan Duhamel with the Aces versus Jacks in the main event. And, of course, he's a Washington State resident who started out playing online there. I got to wonder if Nick Matto is going to move out of his home state.
I don't think he has much choice in the matter.
I don't either.
If he wants to stay there and continue playing the way he has been.
Yep.
So, that'll be a loss for Washington State, just another loss.
Yep, and I think there'll be quite a few players who are really good pros from that state who will move on. All right, let's move on ourselves to take a quick break here and then come back with John Raisner, the runner-up this year in the main event at the World Series of Poker. Our show today is brought to you, of course, by Harrah's St. Louis, where we're going to start that new 2-5 game at 4 o'clock this afternoon and play it every Tuesday from now on. I'm going to buy pizza for everybody who's in the game at 6 o'clock today. Just my little thank you for getting the game going, because it's killed me to leave this place at 4 o'clock every Tuesday and not have a game to play in. I mean, they've got 1-2 games and 3-6 games, but I'm more of a 2-5 and 5-10 player, so I'm happy to have this going on here. I also want to tell you that they've already announced that come January, you'll be able to qualify for the 2011 World Series of Poker main event. They're going to do it the third Saturday and Sunday of each month from January through May with that same shootout format. This is how Dennis got in there 2 years ago. You actually qualified something like 6 months beforehand, didn't you?
They started it that year in November, and in the very first month they had the qualifier, and the very first qualifier I got in.
Yeah.
So, that worked well.
Had to sit back about 7 months before you actually got to do it.
True.
Then had that remarkable run. So we'll certainly fill you in with more information on that come January, but they've already announced the plans for that. And as I told you last week, they have taken the entire area of the casino that's just outside the poker room, which is about a quarter of the entire landscape of this Harrah's St. Louis Casino, and turned it into a smoke-free venue, which means if you're a non-smoking poker player like me, you can now walk from the entrance all the way to the poker room without having a whiff of cigarette smoke. And we don't have the railbirds smoking around during tournaments, and it's really a pleasure. So if you're a non-smoker, you've got that. If you're a smoker, you still got plenty of room here to play. They call it the smoke-free section and the smoke-freely section. Your choice when you come here to Harrah's St. Louis. With Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, I'm Paul Harris with more of the Final Table in just a moment on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, live from Harrah's St. Louis and Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris, along with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. Tell him a little bit about our sponsor, PokerStars.net.
It's unbelievable the stuff they have going on at PokerStars.net right now. You guys have got to sign up for this, download the information, and get going. Just a few of the promotions they have. They have a PCA Fantasy. That's a PokerStars Caribbean Adventure. For free roll, for getting in there and a free-to-enter sit-and-go, you can qualify and be one of the 12 people that are going to be awarded a package worth over $15,000 to take a dream vacation down in the Bahamas in January. That's just one of the things they have going on there. They have a dream job that they're doing. They're looking for somebody to join our team for a whole year and to play pro poker. You get to qualify online for free. You could win a contract worth up to $65,000. That's a monthly salary. That's buy-in to the PokerStars.net top events. It's unbelievable and stuff. They have their nightly $500 free rolls for the NAPT, the North America Poker League, where you can play weekly in league, just like you have a bowling league, just like you have other leagues. You've got a poker league now that you can play in. $500 free rolls for that. It just goes on and on and on, from the $1 Million Challenge to the NAPT that went on in California. I'm telling you, go to this site. There's so much there that you can do, and you can have so much fun doing it. I play on PokerStars.net, and I encourage you guys to also.
Find the poker star in you. Joining us now in the guest segment on the Final Table is the man who came in second about 9 days ago in the main event of the World Series of Poker, John Raisner. We talked to him a couple of months ago, and we're happy to have him back on with us today. Hi, John. How are you?
Good. How you guys doing? Thank you for having me on.
We're happy to have you back. Have you written the thank you note to Joseph Chong yet for giving you $1.5 million gift?
I guess I should have him on my Christmas list, huh? For Christmas cards. But, you know, he said, I talked to him after all. Actually, I didn't talk to him, but he talked to some of my close buddies, and he said he was happy with his move. I mean, he thinks the guy is supposed to fold there 95% of the time, and I mean, you heard him say in interviews before, he didn't want to win it. He didn't want to be the poker ambassador. So I think he's actually happy with this finish, to be honest.
He didn't want to win it.
That I can't believe anyone would ever play a game and say that, but that's what he said in the interview. I have a lot of respect for him, and I love the kid, but I can't believe you said that.
Dennis, do you buy it?
Not a chance. Not a chance in hell. I heard the same interview.
Not a chance in hell that he said that, or not a chance in hell that you believe him?
Not a chance in hell that I believe him. I know he said it.
Okay. I can understand that, but it's 100% true he said that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I heard the same interview. He did say it, and he's actually not the first one to kind of said that. Although he didn't come out blatantly and do it, Darvin said he was quite happy finishing second and not having the limelight. That maybe I could believe. Not that he's happy that he finished second, but he's okay with it. There's a difference. No, not wanting the media and everything like that and still finishing second in it. But I can't believe that this guy did not want that bracelet. I'm sorry. There's too much that goes with it, too much excitement. You're fighting too hard. You spend 8 days putting everything you got into every hand. You want that bracelet.
I mean, I agree with you. I mean, when we're sitting there, I'm giving it my all. I mean, it's like Game 7 of the World Series with full count, two outs in the ninth inning. I mean, I'm on the tip of my toes every single hand that does, every single move that's going on. I'm paying attention to the extent.
John, take us back, if you would, to what was in your mind after Filippo Candio goes out in fourth place, leaving you in third place, up against Joseph Chung and Jonathan Duhamel. Those guys each have about 45% of the chips, and you're way the short stack with 10%. Did you know that they had a tendency to want to butt heads? Did you purposely say to yourself, you know what, I'm not going to do anything. If I only end up with third place money here, I'll be fine, but there's a chance I might move up because it's these two guys?
Well, obviously, right when we got three-handed, I was doing a lot of talking with a good poker buddy of mine, Tommy Vitas, and he said, Racer, I guarantee you these guys are going to butt heads and take each other out. Just because we know how they're both young internet-style players, like that's the tendency that these players have these days. And I had 25 big blinds, so I didn't feel like I had to go all in or anything, so I figured I might as well look fine for a real good spot, sit back, relax. Not relax, but sit back, play tight, and hopefully they get into it. And right away, they started three-betting and four-betting each other in the first 5 minutes. And right then, it clicked to me that they were gonna get in an ego contest, and someone was gonna screw up, and that's what ended up happening.
Well, Tommy's a good friend of mine too, and a very astute poker player. Having him on your side sure didn't hurt any either. I'll bet over there. Who else did you have there in your crowd?
Well, as for big name poker players, just him. Everyone else was close family members, my mom, sister, close friends back home. One of my good buddies, Antonio Tarver, he's a boxer. He came out and supported me. You know, my manager, Jeff. Everyone else is just close family, friends, and family members and stuff like that.
John, we want to talk to you about a couple of hands that you were involved in, but I can't help but ask you about what everybody was talking about afterwards, which was the big blow-up hand where... again, and you were sitting by the side watching Chung and Duhamel go back. Chung raises, Duhamel three bets, comes back to Chung, he four bets. Duhamel then min five bets, and Chung thinks and shoves. Since you were there at the table, and Dennis has already explained how happy you were to be in that situation, and we can all relate to that, were you at the time trying to think to yourself, what does this guy have and what does this guy have? Did you put them on hands, or were you so out of it at that point you didn't care?
I was, to be honest, I didn't get, I can't use the language I want to use, but I could care less what they had. I was so happy and thrilled and pleased to see what was going on. And I was holding it all inside because I didn't want to show any emotions and then see me be happy, because then they'd know that I think that they're idiots. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I was just sitting there cool, calm, and like, when I saw it going on, I was like, wow. I was like, and I knew somebody was going to pull that trigger there, that five or six bet all in. And I was just hoping the other person was the one who had the hand. And I knew one of them for sure had a big pocket pair, and I wasn't sure the other one had, but... It was unbelievable. That was probably the most exciting and thrilling part of the whole tournament for me, because it was the biggest money jump, obviously, and it was a great opportunity. It was one of my goals to come back 2 days later, play heads up.
Were you surprised when Chung turned over the ace-7?
I stood up right away and I had to lean over the table about 3 feet to make sure it was ace-7.
You and the entire crowd up there. You sure heard the buzz when they actually showed.
Oh my gosh! I know it was amazing. I mean, I know my crowd, my section was going crazy. We were just so excited to see them get it all in against each other. I mean, that was like a win in itself for me. I mean, $1.5 million, no one's gonna sneeze at that.
And yeah, no kidding.
Dennis, what was the other hand we wanted to ask him about? Was it the one where Grindr called John's all in?
Well, there were a couple of different hands. There was the one where the Grindr shoved with his pocket threes and got called by Duhamel with an ace nine.
Oh my gosh,
that one I couldn't hardly believe.
I could say. So. I mean, I first of all, I just want to say I have respect for everyone at the table, and they're all my friends, and they all play great. But I can't believe something like that happened as well. It's just beyond me. I don't know which way is worse. So. I guess the call of the ace nine is worse than the all in with threes by Grindr. I think Duhamel raised out. I know he raised out a small blind, but he only raised maybe like $3 million or something like that at most. And then Grindr goes on for 40 or 50. I mean, why would you do that to pick up $3 or $4 million?
Well, yeah, and it's not like
you listen
short
to that. Listen to this. A lot of people don't know this. The hand before that is the hand that Duhamel lost his ace-king versus my ace-queen. So now you know that Duhamel's kind of heated, so he's capable of calling off on a hand, and you only have pocket threes. So he could have you dominated or for sure two overs. And for all those chips with the blinds being what they were and the money jumps at stake, both of the plays were so horrible, in my opinion.
Yeah. I said the same thing last week. I thought probably... the threes might have been a shade better. The call there was, but I can't support either one. It just I would have laid down ace nine. Granted, the push would have pushed me out of the pot.
And you know what? I asked Duhamel the next day because we were doing a press conference. We were waiting in the back room before the press conference, and I go, why did you call there with the ace nine? What were you thinking? And he the typical online player answer, and an answer for someone who probably doesn't know how else to answer it. Oh, I thought he could have been shipping there lighter than my hand, ace nine. and I was just like, wow. I was like, really? I was like, so I go, so if you're wrong, you're out of the tournament, and you don't jump up a couple of $1 million and you don't have a chance to win it anymore.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking to myself.
Just look at it from the other side. He has an ace nine. The absolute, absolute best he has there is a race.
But
no way
exactly.
Is any better than that.
Exactly.
Wow. He did, because he's not going to do that with an ace six or something. You know,
right.
If you're above, right. If you're anywhere in the 40% chance, you've got to think it's a gift from heaven, because you could have been so easily dominated.
Yep, I agree.
So,
all right, well, so then, having said that, that's a good prelude to talking about the hand that you played against Grindr, hand 139, where Mizrachi raised it to $2.5 million as the first player to act. And a lot of these, by the way, for listeners who didn't pay attention, a lot of these were just slightly more than min raises, 2.1,
uh-huh.
2.2, 2.3x. So he raises to $2.5 million, and you've only got a little under $10 million left, and you raised all in. And it was folded back around to the Grindr, and he kind of leaned back in his seat and looked over at you and waited about 2 minutes before he makes the call. You had made your three bet with ace-king offsuit. He makes the call with the ace-eight of diamonds. Now, I asked Grindr this last week, and he didn't really answer my question, so I'm going to ask you. You two know each other. You're good friends. You're both from Florida. You played together. Shouldn't that have come into play before he made his decision, knowing when he looks over at you, yeah, you're the short stack, but you had not three bet all day long at that point. He knows what kind of player you are. He knows that you're probably not going to three bet him all in there with something lighter than ace eight. How can he make the call?
Well, you know what? Right after he called, the first thing he said to me, he goes, I figured that. He goes, but you would have done that with king queen, right? And I just shrugged my shoulders, and the answer is no, to be honest. But I think that, so I guess one hand out of the $3 million that are possible there, he thought I could have had, so he made the call. But here's my thinking, that what he was thinking. It was like, I think, $8 to $10 million more for him to call. And he has, I think, around almost $60 million, then $55 million. I think that he thought I was going to be his biggest competition. I was going to be a hard target to get out. It was only like whatever, like maybe 20% of his stack to call and take the chance. And I think that's why he did it, just because he was already getting the pot out. They were there. 2-1 was there. So, I mean, that's the only reason I could think. But the most important thing is if you think you're dominated, it doesn't really matter what the hell the pot odds are, in my opinion. I'm a firm believer that pot odds are out of the effect when you're almost 100% that you're dominated.
Yep. You know, this is something that Dennis and I have talked about in cash games so many times. You see people say, well, you know what, there's 1,600 in the pot, and it's only another 250 to call on the river, so of course I'm going to call here because I'm getting a huge overlay. No, you're not getting a huge overlay. You're crushed. You have no chance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're giving away money, sir. That's what you're doing.
Yeah. All right. Well, switch things a little bit here. I'm kind of curious about your strategy going into that final table. It was an interesting one, first of all. Just so maybe you haven't seen these figures. The first walk was not given until a 58th hand. The first limp was on the 72nd hand. But I'm curious about this. The first time you 3-bet was on the 90th hand. Did you just not catch cards? Was it your philosophy to play small ball? What kind of a strategy did you go into this with?
First of all, I was off to a real slow start with starting hands. Second of all, we did an interview before on here together, and after that, like a couple weeks before, I did a simulation of the final table with my buddies. We set up the exact table seating, the chips, and everything, and I didn't think it was going to be that helpful, but it turned out to being the best thing I could have done, because what it taught me was how patient being, how important the money jumps were. And what it also taught me is that early on in the tournament, I thought Duhamel and Dolan should have won every single pot, because no one wants to get ninth, and the money jumps are so big, so they should have been putting the maximum pressure on where no one could call unless they have aces. I mean, maybe kings, but whatever. And I would, that's the reason I wasn't raising certain hands I normally would, or wasn't 3-betting as normal as I would, because I was feared that I was going to get 3-bet or 4-bet, like I should have been, or like anyone else should have been. And I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I was playing so snug. I was playing so snug that I raised with kings, and Dolan called early on in the tournament. We were still nine-handed, and the flop came queen high. And he checked, and I checked behind because I didn't want to risk it. And the funny thing is that I would have lost that hand if I bet that flop, because he had king-queen, and he would either raise me or a heart came on the turn and a straight card. So he probably would have popped for me because I couldn't risk it. I couldn't risk coming in ninth. So, I mean, just all those kind of things I've learned during the simulation that we ran, it turned into helped me out perfectly at the final table.
Dennis, did that go through your mind when you were playing? I mean, you went into your table as the chip leader 2 years ago, but then you got involved in that big hand against Ivan Demidov, and at one point you were at real risk. Did the I don't want to go out ninth or even eighth play change how you played?
It always goes in your mind, because you're absolutely right. There's some huge jumps between the different levels there. And I got all the way down to 4% of the chips at one time. So going out was definitely in my mind. But when I went in there, it's interesting what philosophy you're going to do, because you have to play your philosophy against what the other guy's going to do. You know, I'll do this because he'll do that, because I might do this because he'll do that type of a deal. I love your analysis there, because by moving up, by playing a little tight, by knowing that these two guys have the chance to take you out of it and trying to avoid a confrontation with those two big stacks is a very, very solid and a very mature way to play this.
It's the biggest final table. Hopefully I could say it won't be the last one, but it could be the biggest final table I've ever been in my life. And I think the bigger stacks played it pretty poorly early on. I think Duhamel should have won every single hand unless his opponent had pocket aces, nine hands bottom line. That's my opinion. Because no one wants to get ninth, and you have to fold, in my opinion. I don't know. I don't think anyone there had $200 million in the bank, I don't think. So I think everyone wanted the money jumps, and no one wanted to go home with no money. So, I mean, when we were running the simulation, I was sitting there, and I said, wow, if I had his chips, no one would win. He should have been able to pick up, like, $15, $20 million in the first, like, half an hour, just off of blinds and re-steals, in my opinion.
The one exception I might make to that is would be on the grinder, and I might be wrong. I don't know, but I'm just thinking that with his reputation, and I know how he likes to play cards, he'd have a hard time laying down a solid hand to a raise that way, even if it would cost him his chips. But he might be the only exception of the whole table that I would even worry about.
This is the. Let me just get in that this is the Final Table radio show. Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas and Paul Harris in St. Louis, and we're talking with John Reisner, who went to the main event Final Table of the November 9 with fourth-place chips and ended up with second-place chips and a check for $5.5 million for being this year's runner-up. I'm sorry I didn't mean to interrupt you there, John.
Hey, no problem, no problem.
And maybe the other one, Jason Sente, I mean, he did shove in four times in the first 14 hands there.
I was so shocked about that. I mean, I was unbelievably shocked about that. And then you know what? The one time I raised up with Kings, I saw on TV, I raised up with Kings, and he had ace 10 of spades, and he thought about it and folded.
Okay.
And that was nine-handed. And every other time he was re-raising all in and raising all in.
Yep.
But, I mean, I guess that was maybe research he'd done on me, or just he saw how Taito was playing the first, what, only 13 hands? I mean, I don't know, or 15 hands, yep. Whatever it was. I don't know. But
John, I mentioned last week an email we got from a listener by the name of Mark, who downloads the podcast via iTunes and listens to them. He heard us talking about the Final Table before it aired, because we had, of course, known what had happened. Dennis was out there all weekend, and I had watched it on ESPN3.com. And his question about when you two got the heads up, you and Jonathan Duhamel, is why weren't you just moving all in instead of occasionally limping on the button or min-raising on the button and allowing him to run over you? Why weren't you being more aggressive there?
Well, first of all, he didn't run over me heads up because he limped on the button just as much as me, and every time I limped on the button, he didn't raise. So he didn't run over me, for one. It actually went exactly how I wanted, because I wanted to see flops and outplay him after that. I'm not one for, I like to say online, because I know CC is online. They just want to get their chips in and see what happens. I'm not one to get in a 60-40 or like to just flip coins and stuff like that. That's just not my game. That's not how I play. And like I said, it actually worked out pretty good for me heads up how he reacted to my play. He wasn't aggressive like I thought he was going to be. So it just didn't work out for me. I mean, I don't know how many hands heads up was, but I think it was 30 or 40 hands. And besides the queens I had double up on, my next biggest hand I think was ace deuce. So, I mean, I literally had nothing going on at all. And all I wanted to do was one big double up to like 60, 70K, and I would have been happy. I would have felt like I could have come back on one.
Yeah, no, I actually thought that both of you played the heads-up very well. You were definitely playing the small ball. There's no doubt about it. You're both trying to keep it small.
Yeah,
he was letting
me do it, too. So I don't know how I was actually pretty pleased with it. I just couldn't hit any flops or make any hands.
Yep.
Yeah.
I agree with Dennis. I like the way you played it, and you know, it showed the patience you had from the moment you guys got there in the November 9, which was, you know what, I'm going to play my game. You're a great post-flop player. Why not continue to try to do that? It wouldn't have made any sense to try to just exactly what you said. Let's just turn the cards over and see what happens.
Exactly. I'm not one of those pre-flop guys. I feel like I win with the worst hand a lot of times on the flop, turn, or river, just by doing certain moves and making certain plays and putting pressure on people. And I continue to stay with what got me this far in my poker career. And I feel like it worked out really well. I'm really pleased with, obviously I want to win, but for what I had to work with, chips-wise and position-wise and everything, and the hands I picked up that I didn't actually pick up to get second, I was pretty pleased.
Yeah, I mean, I like the heads up, no doubt about it. And you're right. The only hands I saw you have were the queens. There was another one in there late, and it was after hand 30, maybe about hand 35, that you did put about a $7.5 million bet out there, and then he shoved on you and you folded. I was always curious about what that hand was. It wasn't shown on ESPN.
You're talking about which hand was it?
Oh, it was at least halfway through the heads up.
It was when he had Jack 4, 2-pair. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just had a pair of fours. I just the river put a good straight card out there, and it hit the flush as well. And
right.
I figured if he didn't have a 2-pair, he couldn't call. And I knew he didn't have the flush because, as short as I was, he would have check raised me with a flush draw on the flop. One, to get me off any hand besides top pair. Two, he's willing to go with, you know, an over and a flush draw, or two overs and a flush draw when I'm that short. So I knew he didn't have the flush for sure. And, you know, it was a good straight card as well. So I just decided to make a move, but he happened to have 2-pair, so it didn't work out.
John, we know you've signed a deal with Full Tilt Poker, although you couldn't wear their logo on the first day of the final table. You were able to wear it when you got to the heads up, but before that you were wearing card runners and arbitrage clothing and one or two other patches. Why did you not have a deal with Double Bubble Bubblegum?
That's a good question. You know, maybe we should do a team phone call to Double Bubble and ask him. You know, I did an ESPN Red Chair interview whenever the day before the final table, and they asked me so many questions, and I mentioned Double Bubble 30 times. I walked out of the room, and every one of the guys were like, wow, you should be able to get an endorsement with them. So I told my manager called them immediately, and they never got back to him. He called probably, he said, maybe a dozen times that day, and they would never get back to him. And I don't know. I wish I could have. Believe me.
Wow.
They missed an opportunity. In addition to the gum chewing, and by the way, as a gum chewer myself, I can't believe you can chew the same piece of gum all day long. Do you have other...
It's not always the same piece. I don't believe everyone who says that or writes that.
Okay, so clear it up for us right now.
I would say probably a good maybe 4 hours worth the same piece. It's usually two pieces, and then... you know, I refresh it up. Like, when I went down to the final table with nine people left, when I left my hotel room, I actually forgot the bubble gum. I had to have my buddy go up and get it for me out of my backpack. He brought it out to me, and I had, like, five or six pieces in my pocket.
Wow.
At the end, I came back. I think I had two or three pieces left, and then I used those for the heads up. So, I mean, it wasn't just the same one piece any of the days of the tournament. It wasn't.
All right, Dennis, we're almost out of time here. I'm going to leave the last question to you.
Well, I was going to say, do you realize how many prop bets you just ruined, Paul, by asking that question?
You're a sicko.
The one thing I did see that I did like, and I wanted to compliment you on, I did see the patch there for the bad beat on poker that you were wearing.
Bad beat on cancer.
The 1%er. The bad beat on cancer, I'm sorry. The 1% patch that you were wearing, and I wanted to compliment you on that. And
yeah, thank you very much. I am taking care of them and everything, so that's good.
Sweet. So did I. Great cause and well worth it. There's no doubt about that.
Cool.
One other question I had for you, were there any other sponsors or causes or anything else going on or something that you wanted to promote here in the next few weeks? You know, I know your life has changed. What's going on for the next month or two that's of special interest to us?
I mean, I would like to mention a sponsorship that did me a lot of stuff was the Fiend energy drink. You could go to getfiend.com to get that energy drink. And, you know, Bubba Army, he did a lot of stuff for me. Bubba Love Sponge radio show. You know, Full Tilt was just amazing. I just had so much things going on. My website, johnracer.com, and we're doing a documentary at racermovie.com. Just all those cool things going on. And then as for the next couple months, I might go out to the Bellagio tournament a little bit before Christmas for the main event out there. If not, or even if I do go, I'm definitely going to go to the Bahamas tournament in Atlantis in January. It's one of my favorite trips of the year. It's a big tournament, and it's an awesome place to be.
Sweet. Well, I definitely see you in the Bahamas. I may see you at the Bellagio also. So we'll hook up together and have an energy.
I know you being a poker shot guy, I've definitely seen the Bahamas, so we'll definitely catch up there.
All right, sweet.
Well, John, congratulations again. Thanks for coming back on the show to be so candid about how things went for you at the final table. We're very happy for you, and we appreciate your time. We look forward to having you back on the show in the future.
For sure, anytime. I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
All right, take care.
John
Bye.
Reisner, second place this year, the runner-up at the main event of the 2010 World Series of Poker, with a little beeping in there. for just a little bonus for you race nerd fans. We appreciate his coming on there, and what a great guy. And, you know, he came out of that Florida poker world that you and I have talked about so much. And next time we talk to him, we'll have to see if the $5.5 million is back in play at some of the horse tracks and dog tracks and Indian casinos down there in some of the games that are there. Before we bring on our last guest here, Dennis, talk a little bit about the Poker Players Alliance.
Well, Poker Players Alliance, it's the site, the people that are trying to make this game that we all love so much available for everybody, so that we can have this clear, level playing field, so we all can go out there and play it and not have to worry about any of these problems. Freedom to be able to do exactly what we love to do, and that's what they're pushing for. The PPA.org, it's a great organization. I belong to it. I encourage everybody else to belong to it. And a friend of mine by the name of John Pappas runs it and does an amazing job. And we were able to help some of the different candidates in this last election get back in there. They're supporting us. If you go to their site, you can find out exactly what your representative's view on this particular issue is. They have a voting record, and they grade each and every one of them from A all the way down to a D-minus. And you can see whether these guys are actually sharing your view and sharing your want of this freedom. So go to the PPA.org. For $20, you can join the organization. It'll be the best $20 you ever spent.
All right, tomorrow, Dennis and I are going to be heading to Lawrenceburg, Indiana. That's about a half hour outside of Cincinnati, where the Hollywood Casino is located for a big event that'll be the finale of their Hollywood Fall Classic. The guy who's the tournament director there, Kevin Dawn, joins us now here on the final table. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just great. Before we get there, I hear you've already been off to an enormous start, nearly 1,000 people in your first event.
Yeah, Friday we got started off with a deep stack event, had 985 people in it. First place was a little over $59,000 for a $340 buy-in.
Wow!
That's got to be a record.
It was for us, yeah. We're pretty happy with the turnout for it. So
what's the schedule for the rest of this week?
Tomorrow we're running a Hold'em tournament, a 340 Hold'em tournament at noon, and a pot limit high-low tournament at 3 in the afternoon, and then on Thursday we have a 550 deep stack tournament, and then we're running some satellites on Friday for the main event, which is on Saturday, and that's a $1,600 buy-in.
Now, Dennis and I are both going to be in the main event. Are you going to get there in time to join me for the 550 on Thursday, Dennis?
Not for sure, but I'm trying to work that out. Hopefully I can. I also invited a friend of mine by the name of Chris Moneymaker. You may have heard of him. He's going to join us up there, too. We're going to be there by Friday for a couple of autograph sessions and then to play on Saturday.
Great.
So, hey,
go ahead.
Chris and I coming in there. TK told me that you already had entries from 15 different states for this main event.
It's close. I think for the main event itself, we might have about 10, but I know so far for the event, we have entries from, I think, 25 or 26 for the event itself. Overall, but I think the main event we've got, like I said, it's somewhere around 10 or 11 already.
Well, I've been lucky enough to be over there at the Hollywood Casino. Just give a brief description of that room and the way you've got it set up there and the kind of cash games that you usually play there at the Hollywood.
Well, our regular poker room's got 41 tables in it. It has a dedicated high limit area that has 9 tables in it. A typical weekend, we'll run like a 1-3-5 pot limit Omaha game. We'll have a couple of those. We'll have a 5-10 no limit, some 2-5 no limits. That's usually what runs up in high limit. And then in our in the rest of the room, we'll run a 1-2 and a 1-3 no limit, and then usually 3-6 on the limit side, some 5-10 high-low Omaha, every once in a while a 10-20 limit game.
Well, you said the magic words for me that you're running PLO. We were talking last week and several times before about how you got to stay here kind of in the Midwest to go to casinos that have pot limit Omaha action. And this will be my first time at the Hollywood. I'm glad you've got that because I know I'm not going to last long in these tournaments. So I'll be able to go and play in some PLO cash games, and I'm looking forward to that. Have you been getting big ones going during the Fall Classic?
We have this past weekend, Friday and Saturday, we had some really nice 1-3-5 PLO games going. It's a 100 to 1,000 buy-in on those games, and I would say that once they got running, we were sitting at somewhere around maybe 20,000-25,000 on the table. So
sweet.
There was some very good action on them.
I'm looking forward to that.
Well, yeah, and Chris will probably be right in there on the PLOs on Friday night.
Well, we were expecting Chris. I know he likes to gamble just a little bit, so we figured he might be good in the PLO game.
All right, well, guys, I know I've gone over to Hollywood, and I've had a great time over there, so I'm really looking forward to this.
The website, if you want to get more information, is HollywoodIndiana.com. It's the Hollywood Fall Classic coming to a big finale this weekend with still lots of play going on between now and when the main event goes on Saturday. And that's a two-day main event, right, Kevin?
That is correct.
Well, we're both really looking forward to being there, and we thank you for coming on today, and we'll see you in just a couple of days.
Well, thanks for having me, and we'll see you guys this weekend.
All right.
All right, take care, Kevin.
All righty.
Kevin Dawn, who's the tournament director at the Hollywood Casino in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, which draws people from not just Indiana, but Ohio and Kentucky, because that's where those three states come together. All right, Dennis, we'll take some of our broadcast equipment with us there, and maybe we'll sit down with Moneymaker and a couple of other pros who might show up, and we'll do some stuff from there and bring it back and play that on next week's show. Also next week, we're scheduled to have this year's main event champion, Jonathan Duhamel. So for now, that's all from Las Vegas and Harrah's St. Louis. I'm going to jump off here and get into the new 2-5 game that is starting up. And, Dennis, I'll see you in Indiana.
Sounds good. I will see you, Paul.
This is the Final Table on 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcast downloadable through iTunes and on thechipleader.com.